Attorney General William Barr has agreed to testify before the House Judiciary Committee next month. Let me tell you something. I think that's awesome. This will be his appearance will be the first before the panel as questions swirl around whether or not he intervened in the case of Roger Stone, which he's the Attorney General. That's part of what he does, particularly when it comes to sentencing guidelines. And we talked last hour, well, the first half hour of last hour, about this, and how I'm telling you, this is going to blow up in the face of the Democrats. It has, over the last 12, 16 hours or so, come to light that the jury foreperson was anti-Trump activist that was on social media commenting about this trial from beginning and evidently throughout, and she was a huge supporter of the prosecutors going after Roger Stone, and this woman was allowed on the jury. She mocked people who said that, you remember Stone, it was a pre-dawn raid, as if this guy were some sort of drug lord. And people were like, what? And they called CNN ahead of time so CNN could be there with cameras before the sun even came up. I mean, it was all, everything about it was so evidently set up in order to be politicized. And she was cheering it along all the way. She was mocking people who thought that was over. And this was a woman on the jury. So I, for one, look forward to Barr is a very smart, very measured, very unhysterical individual. And when you look at the way that these Democrats run these, just look at how they ran these the impeachment hearings. Barr will run circles around these individuals. Barr is like a gold medal Olympian, and these are amateurs that are, they're like not even off the bench. They're that bad. And to have those two face off, particularly when Barr is above board, Barr has demonstrated himself to be the one shining light in the justice system that we have in the country today, at that level, who is just, you know, doing the job and not affected by politics. And this is one of those instances where I'm glad that he's going to go up there. I wish it were happening today. But we will have to wait some time. The date of that, it's going to be sometime next month. I'm not sure what the exact date is. But nonetheless, we have Don Luzader now with the latest news update.
And good morning. Several firefighters in Nixa are being sued for sexual harassment. Dana Osborne, the first woman hired by the Nixa Fire Protection District, says her coworkers make inappropriate comments about her and show her explicit photos. Her attorney says the department has done nothing to stop the behavior. A wrongful death lawsuit's been filed after a crash between a van and a semi last summer on I-44 in Springfield. A father of three children killed in the crash says the driver of the semi failed to signal when he came back on the interstate from the side of the road. He says the mother of the children was speeding when the van hit the front of the semi. And one person is in custody after a deadly stabbing in Ozark County. The sheriff says deputies got a call about a fight and found Robert Chambers dead inside of a home north of the Arkansas line. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. Clouds today, temperatures dropping to around 19. Tomorrow, or tonight rather, temperatures are going to continue to drop till we hit 7. Sunny 38 tomorrow, Saturday partly sunny 50, Sunday mostly sunny 56, 22 and cloudy. The KSGF Studios. We will be in studio tomorrow, Friday Road Show right here at home. I know you think, he keeps saying that we're working on a play. It was a week ago. We sat down and had a great conversation with the manager of an establishment, but they've got to have conversations with the owners, and I know that the manager felt really good about having us there. In fact, some of the employees of the restaurant were very – they liked the idea. They're like, oh, this would be fantastic. So there were just some approvals that were needed. And I don't know for sure that it will happen. And I'm not saying the location of the place just because I don't know if it's going to happen yet. And if it doesn't, I don't want people to be like, I'm never going there again. because there are a lot of decisions that go into this. You got it to some degree appreciate. the fact that business owners, given the environment today, weigh into consideration of partnering with a station like KSGF or a show like this one, the fact that they open themselves up to crazies on the Now, we're pretty lucky because most of the businesses that do partnerships with us don't end up dealing with that. I mean, there'll be one weird anomaly that pops up here and there, and generally because of the overwhelming feedback that is positive, if you get, you know, out of a year and a half, one person that pops up and like, I can't believe you do business with that it is so irrelevant in the sea of positive feedback. But still, if you are, you don't know that. You've never partnered with KSGF before, and you think, well, you see on the news how people from the left, they attack businesses, they go after people who don't see things their way. They try and do everything they can to stamp out any sort of real diversity of thought, and it can be very intimidating. We've been pretty fortunate that our partners don't have to deal with that so much. So and there are other considerations, of course, that go into it as well. We're working on it, though. I want you to know we are working on it because I want to get back out there with you all on Fridays. And plus, I like being able to have some Eggs Benedict or something while I do the show. That ain't bad, too. Coffee seems to be better, generally, when we're out. Though, with the Ninja in studio now, it's much better. Okay. Missouri House gives initial approval to proposed system to crack down on drug problems. The Missouri House given preliminary approval to a bill that would require the creation of a statewide prescription drug monitoring program. Because if anything screams why Republicans should be in control, it is the creation of a statewide program that monitors and tracks you and what prescriptions your doctor prescribes for you, right? That's definitely smaller, less intrusive government. That's definitely liberty-focused. The GOP House Speaker, that would be local Representative Elijah Haar, teamed up with House Democratic leaders in order to support this. This story, when I printed it off from OzarksFirst.com, and oddly enough, it has another story in the middle of it. I think there was a cut and paste issue. I was reading through this, and all of a sudden it's talking about football programs, and I thought, what in the hell is this all about? It talks about jury, varsity, esports, and then all of a sudden it gets back into discussion about prescription drug monitoring program. So I think there was an accidental pasting of an entire article. So we'll get this posted at KSGF.com, but if you get past the first paragraph and all of a sudden you're very confused, I think that's why. Okay, so then after it talks about festivals and so forth at universities, then it gets back to Missouri is the only state in the nation, big selling point, of course, only state in the nation without a statewide system designed to help find cases of misuse and abuse. Bill sponsor Holly Ryder, whom we've had on this show, a Republican from Southeast Missouri's Scott City, said the state needs to battle drug addiction problems on the front end. She said, we cannot continue band-aiding the problem. All other states do not have it wrong, and somehow Missouri's the only state that has this figured out. Seriously? Now, I'm not even sure what that means, because, as you know, we have a crisis in this country dealing with this, and the crisis is in the country, not in Missouri. Given that, and they love to point this out, every other state has a prescription drug monitoring program, then why is every other state continue year after year after year to see an increase in the problem? I mean, if you've noticed, the problem is so big nationwide, it was addressed by President Trump during the State of the Union. If prescription drug monitoring programs were part of the solution, then we would be on the way to victory, and Missouri would be the only state. You'd have Missouri at the top. But that's not reality. Now, here's a part of the story that I wanted to highlight, and it's for many people incidental. She got emotional when talking about her family's addiction problems. Quote, as a grandmother who got grandbaby out of a meth lab, who was living in one, there's no way that I would have the passion for this bill if I did not know from researching the data that this gets to the underlying problem. A person doesn't go to illicit drugs immediately. Now, she clearly hasn't researched. Dr. John Lilly has researched this issue more than anybody I know in the entire country. These programs don't work. All that being said, there was a day and a time when we had this expectation of objectivity, particularly when it comes to creating laws that were going to affect all of us. And in a case which takes, you know, it's just another database that's going to be created that they promise, oh, don't worry, your privacy will be protected. Yeah, right. But objectivity was expected. And if individuals were too close to an issue, those individuals would be asked to step aside. In fact, that's an expectation that to a degree we still have when it comes to investigations. I mean, you see it portrayed in television shows all the time. You know, you got some lead detective and they have a relationship with the victim and you know, there's a big, they want to be on the case. Like, no, you're too close to this. You've heard that. You're too close to this. You can't be objective. We need, you're gonna do more harm than good. We need objectivity here. But for whatever reason, we have transitioned to where instead of people who are too emotionally close to a particular cause, recognizing that because of that lack of objectivity, particularly if it's emotionally charged, that they are the people who should step back, step aside, maybe even recuse themselves from voting, while objective individuals who can look at things objectively are the ones who push it forward. But we've turned that all upside down to where if you are so emotionally engaged in something, if you have such a personal, that you can't even talk about it without crying, you should be the one that leads the charge on this. You think about even in when it comes to counseling, when it comes to advising people who deal with emotionally stressful situations, or if they are, you know, engaged with people that they have emotional, you know, conflicts with, and in there are these exercises that are commonly known, you know, instead of confronting the person, write everything down and wait a day. And you know, then if you still feel the same way, approach it. Or don't make it, if you are emotionally upset or angry, don't make a decision. Don't make a decision in the heat of the moment. We hear that all, these are always bits of advice that we are given when it comes to making wise decisions. Yet when it comes to making laws, we take the most emotionally engaged people, not those who step away, not those who are not impacted or affected emotionally. We take the people that are the individuals that should be the last ones to lead the charge, and we put them up front, and then you can't even question them. Well, you don't know what it's like. I think that we need to stop enhancing the level of expertise by default for people who are emotionally tied to particular issues. And instead, maybe stop, and it's nothing against them, but apply the same advice that we're all given in our daily lives when it comes to making decisions in the heat of the moment, and we don't. And instead, have an expectation of objective individuals presenting these ideas. It's just a thought. But, you know, sadly, once again, you have, and there are a number of Republicans that are opposed to this, but when you have the Speaker of the House teaming up with Democrats and some Republicans, I mean, the Republicans, the only way that we are going to have an intrusive expansion, you know, this new database, and they say, well, this doesn't have anything to do with government. Well, then you wouldn't be pushing it, would you? I mean, what the laughable notion that government has been here in Missouri year after year, session after session, trying to push this through, but then they try to convince you that this really doesn't have anything to do with government. And trust them. Trust government, because they'll never misuse it. They'll never pass your information along to the they'll never allow red flag laws to become a component of the prescription drug monitoring program. It's all based on people telling you to trust government. And when you have a leader of the Republican Party in Missouri and others that continue to take that sort of position, then we got real trouble. Parker Pageant with the traffic update. I'm Nick Reed. I don't want to talk much more about prescription drug monitoring program, but there is one component of this I want to hit, and it is a continued amazement on my part. People who utilize their closeness to the relationship as justification, not just justification, but as like a resume enhancer, as a degree of sorts on the issue. In other words, well, I know a lot about it because I have a personal connection, yet they seem to know so little about it. And the idea here is that when it comes to creating a prescription drug monitoring program, the reason is because most people who get addicted to drugs, it starts with prescription drugs. So in other words, throw out their back, some sort of injury, get painkillers, and that's the beginning of it. But the myth is that it is an overprescribing that causes the addiction. If there is an overprescribing that is occurring, that is not causing the addiction. That is a result of an addiction. So if you figure out some way to prevent overprescribing, those people are already addicted, and so you are just kicking up the timeline for them to jump to more illegal ways to get the drug than otherwise would exist. If a person just, whether it is mental, emotional, physical, is an individual that's going to have an addiction to painkillers, they're going to have it after the very first one. I had 30 days of painkillers and I could have stopped just like that, but because the doctor prescribed me another month's worth, now I'm addicted. And that's the myth that they are perpetrating out there, that if you somehow prevent doctors from overprescribing or individuals from doctor shopping, then that means that they won't be addicted anymore. Well, that's insane. That's just the way that people who are already addicted are going about getting it. Now, they're going to argue, well, that's what we need to stop. Okay, fine. But what I'm saying is, even if you do, that's not going to stop them from getting it through other means. In fact, and this is what we know because of the facts and statistics, the vast majority of people who satisfy those addictions are not doing it through the means that a prescription drug monitoring program is going to have any impact on. In other words, it's not through doctors, it's not through doctor shopping, it's other means. So if your goal is to stem the number of individuals that have these addictions and that are fulfilling these addictions, this is not going to do it. This is more of making the person in charge feel as if they're in control, feel as if they're doing something, because in their minds they just have to, quote, do something because they recognize there's a problem and they're in a position of authority, so we just have to do something. And it doesn't really matter that it doesn't work because it makes them look at what we did. And this instinct that runs counter to what many of us were taught as young as 5 and 6 years old, this instinct that, well, everybody else is doing it, so we should do it too. And that instinct is there so profoundly, that is one of the arguments that they use. And every article that pops up, write about this. Missouri is the only state that doesn't do it. I mean, have we all become so far removed from the very basic world of common sense that some of the few lessons we were taught as young children no longer apply? Just because everyone else does it doesn't mean that you should too. If Johnny jumped off a bridge, would you? I mean, these are simplistic ways of explaining life lessons, and yet we just throw all that out the window and aren't even embarrassed to use that as a reason. Everybody else is doing it. We should be embarrassed as thinking entities to use that as a rationale and justification. All right, what time is it? I have no concept of what hour we're in. I was thinking, oh, I got a guest coming up. No, I don't. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders coming up. You got a number of pieces here. Dems panic. I mean, you have, again, elected Democrats out there saying Bernie Sanders is going to destroy the country. You have Nevada's powerful culinary union accusing Bernie Sanders supporters of viciously attacking the members of their union because they're against Medicare for all. And I love this. Foreigners that are working from overseas, contacting Americans, trying to convince them to vote for Bernie Sanders. Some might call that foreigners interfering in our election. Unless you're a Democrat, of course. Then that's just the world recognizing that as the United States, we need to correct ourselves. But if you're from another country and you try to interfere in our election on behalf of Donald Trump, or allegedly on behalf of Donald Trump, well, that's collusion and people need to go to prison. As usual, two sets of rules.
Mr. Don Luzader.
Are you in tomorrow?
I am in tomorrow.
I'm going to start calling you 3-day weekend,
yeah,
Don.
I thought about this the other day. It's like, I got to work a full week this week. What am
so
I going to do?
Have you just sort of, I guess you've done that for a while. You just spread your vacation out over 3-day weekends.
Yeah, and a lot of times during baseball season, when I go up to St. Louis, I'll take like that Monday off and stuff like that.
It's got to be easier, I imagine, when you're in charge. It's easier to leave somebody else in charge for a day or two instead of a week.
Yeah, even though I did that over the holiday, over the Christmas and New Year's holiday, I was gone for about 2 weeks there. So
as long, you were gone a long time.
Yeah.
If you have competent people, then it's all right.
Well,
I'm lucky I got Sarah.
Yeah, yeah. She looks tired today. No, just kidding. Sorry, just kidding. I couldn't resist that.
Oh, I guess you
someone him. Said that on
She's like, somebody
Facebook.
Told me on Facebook I look tired.
You don't look tired. I'm kidding. A wrongful death lawsuit's been filed after a crash between a van and a semi last summer on I-44 in Springfield. A father of three children killed in that crash says the driver of the semi failed to signal when he came back on the interstate from the side of the road. He says the mother of the children was speeding when the van hit the front of the semi. Also this morning, authorities in Ozark County say one person's in custody after a deadly stabbing there. The sheriff says deputies got a call about a fight and found Robert Chambers dead inside of a home north of the Arkansas line. Several NHTSA firefighters being sued for sexual harassment. Dana Osborne, the first woman hired by the NHTSA Fire Protection District, says her coworkers make inappropriate comments about her and show her explicit photos. Her attorney says the department has done nothing to stop the behavior. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. We've got a cloudy day. They will eventually clear off. Temperatures dropping to around 19. For the day, and then into the overnight hours, they will start to drop again, down to 7. Sunny, 38 tomorrow, partly sunny on Saturday with a high of 50, mostly sunny Sunday, a high of 56 expected. The current temperature is, I don't really know what it is, I think it's 21. So that's where we were earlier. My official temperature monitoring program over here. And I got 21 rather, it's 21. Fake weather. That story Don had about the female firefighter in NHTSA suing because of sexual harassment and then claiming that nothing was done about it. I don't know anything about that specific case. I don't think I know any of those people involved, so I don't interpret my thoughts here as being specific to that particular case. But it is a further reflection of the contradictions that we have in our society. And on one hand, there is this demand to treat men and women the same. But then when they do, sometimes you get accusations of sexual harassment. Now, not like this is not applicable because I don't know the specifics of what it was alleged in terms of sexual harassment here, but oftentimes crude jokes, talking about personal bedroom exploits, having up calendars or pictures of things of a certain nature. And so if, I mean, realistically, if that is your environment and that's how you are with the guys and you're told treat women just the same as you do guys, and you're like, oh, okay. And then you do. And then all of a sudden, no, wait, you can't do that because she's a woman. And now it's sexual harassment. And so we send these contradicting messages. And I'm not arguing one way is right or one way is the other. But it's just, or one way is right and one way is wrong. But it's just this... Nobody wants to acknowledge these contradictions that are out there. All right, are we supposed to treat women like men, and then are women supposed to treat men like women, or are we not supposed to do that? You know, the double standard that is applied to Trump all the time on this. How many times has Trump been attacked because of the things, the insults specifically towards women? Now, I've always argued, and I still believe this is absolutely true. There's been no president that has treated men and women equally to the degree that President Trump has. Now, you may not like how that treatment is, but there's no one who has demonstrated when it comes to treatment, whether it's hiring or lobbying insults, that gender is not in effect for him. He'll throw insults out, jabs out, mock men. He'll do it to a woman just as quickly, just the same way. But then he gets trashed. And how we hear, I don't like the way that he treats women. So we don't want men and women treated equally. Now, I'm one of these people. I do treat women different than I treat men. People can call it whatever you want. Call it old-fashioned, call it. I like that term. It seems a little less offensive than what other people would call it. I mean, some people, and you've heard this before, maybe, you know, if you open a door for a woman, that is an oppressive thing to do. You know, you get these extreme individuals on the left and, you know, just be nice. But then on the other hand, you're like, okay, fine, I'll treat you just like a guy. But you can't do that. That's sexual harassment. You can't tell crude jokes around. Well, why? What a guy. What do you want? We seem to pick and choose situationally, which I actually happen to believe isn't necessarily a bad thing, but we should just accept that. You know, let's say, for example, you've got a firehouse and you got a gal who is absolutely fine with being treated just like, you know, and then you're like, okay, that's cool. But what if you have one that isn't? Oh, okay. Now this person doesn't like to hear those jokes, so we don't do it. We will treat her like a lady instead of one of the guys. What happens is we, as a culture, though, we express this universal expectation on one hand that genders should be treated equally, but then just in any given day that switches and universally we are supposed to treat them differently. And so there's this conflicting presentation out there that, you know, certain things are completely unacceptable, well, until they are. And so I hear a story like that, and oftentimes the things that are labeled as sexual harassment are the jokes, the crude humor, the conversations about exploits. And oftentimes it's more than that, but sometimes. But even, you know, I mean, if you got a... Don't want to get too detailed on it, but point being is these are things that are a sign of equality, but then you get in trouble for it. just a thought. I want to throw out one other, bouncing around a little bit here, an analogy regarding the prescription drug monitoring program thing. This is one of those issues that is so black and white, and there's so much evidence on one side versus the conventional wisdom and the easy route that I can't let it go. And it in one of those areas is this argument that addiction stems from overprescribing, when that's not true. People who are addicted tend to seek out ways to get overprescribed. But what, and this is the justification oftentimes for the prescription drug monitoring programs, is to catch doctors or pharmacists that, or just whether they know that they are participants in this or not, you know, the idea of doctor shopping, and that if you stop that, you're going to stop the addiction. And that's just not, that is not the case. That is, arguing that overprescribing is what leads to addiction is like claiming a bartender that overserve someone is what causes that person to be an alcoholic. Well, that's not true. Much like an individual who gets addicted to some sort of painkiller, it only takes one. It isn't, oh, I took my month's supply, but because I got another month's supply, which I didn't actually need, that's what caused me to be addicted. This is why people who are alcoholics aren't allowed to have just one drink, because that's what triggers it. That's it. That's all it takes, one sip. It's an all or nothing. People who are addicted to alcohol aren't told, oh, well, you can have four beers. That's fine, because you're not addicted then. It's just you can't have eight. There is a vast misunderstanding as to addiction by so many of these people who are pushing the prescription drug monitoring program. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that today. Coming up, Dems panic. Bernie will ruin our economy, cost us the House. Voters don't want socialism, don't care about the military. Well, the problem is a significant portion of Democrats do. Maybe not a majority. But, you know, Bernie has won the first two contests for a reason. And is leading in states like California for a reason. I'm amazed at these Democrats that are running around, and many of them are elected officials, that are demonizing Bernie Sanders. And I'm like, the only reason Bernie Sanders is where he is because a significant portion of your voters are putting him there. So when you're pointing out that Bernie Sanders will ruin the economy, he will cost the House, he's going to destroy lives, he's going to destroy the military, you've got to understand the only reason that he's even potentially going to be in the position to do so is because of Democrat voters. Parker with traffic, I'm Nick Reed. All right, let's go to the Queen City Motors talk and text line. Richard in Springfield, welcome to the show, Richard.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Hey, you know, if I was married, the doctor can't even tell my wife what is going on. He cannot tell anybody. It's supposed to be the patient's privacy. This prescription drug monitoring, it don't make any sense. Would you trust the government handling your personal information? I don't want to.
Well,
I've never seen him do anything right.
I know. This is a contradiction that so many Americans have. If you ask them about entities that they, you know, on the trust level, government's at the bottom. But then when it comes to the things that are most sacred to them, like medicine, they're like, oh, yes, that's who I want to run things. That's who I want to make decisions for me. And, you know, I'm like, really? Because I don't think that is, you know, that doesn't seem right. Yeah, if you talk to some folks, this prescription drug monitoring program, because I constantly point out how it doesn't work, and there are going to be people who say they know it doesn't work. That's not what they're doing. This is about helping create a database for the federal government to be able to monitor, and it will make the transition to socialized medicine a lot easier, because socialized medicine or Medicare for all, call it whatever you want, it's ration care. Well, they aren't going to ration care. Well, of course, if you only have one entity, only have one entity, and there are a finite number of doctors, finite number of prescription, because there's no competition. There's no, you know, the government decides how many and whom it is you get to see and what procedures you can get. That means there's a certain amount, and then they are going to decide who gets what. That is rationing by definition. When you only have one entity that is in charge of providing goods and services, that entity, like all entities, are going to decide, you know, their priorities get decided, right? Yeah, so you go to the emergency room. They have to prioritize what order they see people. Why is that? Well, there are only so many beds, so many doctors. When you have competition, when you have capitalism involved, then you can get, in fact, the worse things get, the better in a free society and in a horrible capitalistic society. That is when it's best for new competition to come in, because they're like, man, look, they're doing a horrible job. People would love to come to an alternative option here, or an alternate option where the wait time is less. And so I'm going to do that and create that. Well, if you shift to a system in which the government is in charge of all that stuff, you don't have an option to go elsewhere. Because, there may be another physical building, but guess who runs it all? Government. Government writes the rules. Now, there may be the illusion of autonomy because, well, the hospitals are owned by different companies, but they are imprisoned by the same rules that are created by the government. And when government is the one that writes the check, you know, theoretically you're paying for your medical care because the government takes a huge chunk out of it, but that chunk goes to pay for the goods and the services, and then they decide whom gets it. That's how that works. That's how it works. That is rationing. Simply because you recognize that people don't like the idea of it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. And I guarantee you, you in a discussion with Bernie Sanders or any of these other people that like the idea of universal health care, Medicare for all, however they want to term it, single-payer health, it's all the same thing. And you use the term rationing, they'll act like, oh, that's just scaremongering. But that's exactly what you are, rationing it out. Because you are the one who holds the keys to the castle. Let's say that you are, let's say there's some sort of apocalypse that occurs, and you knew that it was going to occur, and so you planned ahead, not just for yourself, but for your community, and you've been stockpiling food, and you have just stockpiled, and you've got a lot of it. But when it comes to the food, and you're going to sell it maybe or whatever, whatever method you're going to use. But point being is, it is, you are in charge of it. Well, obviously, you're the one who's going to decide who gets what. Somebody comes in, they're like, I want to buy every can of tuna you have. Well, then you have to decide, do I let that person do it and then nobody else gets tuna? Or is that not fair? No, you can only have this amount. Well, but I've got a big family. Well, sorry, there's not, we have to be fair about this. We have to make sure that everybody gets their, quote, fair share. That is rationing. And that is the system that is going, that's what they're pushing towards. You think that that's not true? Bernie Sanders, when it comes to food and rationing food, has argued that that is a good thing. Comes to the socialized world of grocery stores, food distribution, and you know, many of us grew up understanding socialism as we saw the images of the Soviet Union and people waiting in line for hours to get in. There was only so much food there, and, you know, they'd have to, and they were allowed, so, you know, you can get one of this and one of that and so forth. It was a horrible system. Bernie Sanders argued, you know, as somebody that was a lover of the Soviet Union and all things socialist and communist, and people would point out to him, well, what about breadline? He actually argued, no, that's a good thing, because that means that nobody's getting more than anyone else. So if somebody like Bernie Sanders believes it's virtuous when it comes to food, you die without food. I mean, you will die without food before you'll die without medical care. You die without food. If Bernie Sanders believes it's virtuous to ration food for people to have to stand in line because that way nobody gets more than anybody else, then why does it not stand to reason that he also believes that it's virtuous to ration health care? Of course it is, in his mind. And this is why you've got the Culinary Union in Nevada are pushing back against his Medicare for All plan. Well, one, you know, there's recognition of the rationing component to this, but also this is one of their, this is part of what makes as a union them relevant. You know, if you take out the ability of the unions to negotiate health benefits, then you've taken out a huge reason that they even exist. And so government taking that over causes the unions to become much, much, much less powerful. And so that's a huge component as well. The point being is they are pushing back against this. And they have come out and they're saying Bernie Sanders, his people are threatening our union members. We've got to take a break. We've got a lot coming up here. We've got author of the week. I can't believe how fast the morning is going. Springfield's News Talk FM 104.1 KSGF. If you have not had the pleasure of having lunch at Doe's Eat Place as of yet, you can do so with me by going to KSGF.com. We've got our Doe's Eat Place Lunch Bunch. Just get registered there. If you win, then you and up to seven of your friends and coworkers will join me for lunch at Doe's Eat Place on a Thursday. Delicious, delicious, and great company as well. Get signed up at KSGF.com.